Hi, y'all. This is Kristen Chenoweth.
Hi, I'm Gloria Stefan.
This is Sarah Bareilles.
Hi, I'm Patti LuPone.
This is Lin-Manuel Miranda. You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Raindrops on roses and whiskers on kittens, bright copper kettles and warm woolen mittens, brown paper packages tied up with strings. These are a few of my favorite things.
Happy Thursday, everybody.
Happy Throwback Thursday, everyone. How's it going, Kev?
Hey, Rob. How are you, buddy?
Oh, man, I'm tired.
I know you.
I'm
sounds like we
I am,
this up.
I am but exhausted, but exhilarated.
Yes, especially after last night. But the week you've had, I think you've had three shows at 54 Below.
Three in a row.
54 Below. Three in a row. Like, what nights were they?
Well,
and what were they?
Oh, my God. Well, you know, we did Ballroom on September 4th, which we've already talked about.
Right.
And then Sunday night, which was September 9th, we did an original cast reunion of Ain't Misbehavin'.
I love that.
Oh, my God. It was historic. Watching Ken Page. It was like a rock concert. Ken Page, Andre DeShields, and Charlene Woodard doing their thing was absolutely incredible. Andre did the Viper's drag. 40 years later, and they all look like it was 1978.
40. That's insane.
Ken Page went up on stage and started Your Feet's Too Big and said, "What's that running around in here?" The whole audience stood up and just gave him a huge ovation. It was watching him and Andre. Now, here's the cool thing. He and Andre did Fat and Greasy. Right? Do you know Fat and Greasy?
No, I don't actually.
It's their big duet in Act 2.
Oh, of course.
Yeah, because of Ken and Andre's schedule, they never rehearsed it. So the first time they did it in like 40 years, or 30 years, I should say, was them doing it together on stage in front of an audience.
Incredible. I'm sure it was on fire.
And what an audience. Lynn Ahrens, Leslie Odom Jr. So many people came out to support them. It was really, really incredible. And then last night, oh my God, Kevin, last night was Golden Rainbow.
Buildup. We've had a big buildup.
We've had a big buildup because
Debbie, there's been a lot of it's been very popular. It's been a lot of people's favorite thing.
Kevin, I still can't get over this. Let me explain this once again, because I'm in awe. Jen and I are trying to do more anniversary concerts at the club because we think those sell really well, which they do. And she was like, "Oh, it's the 50th anniversary of Golden Rainbow." And I'm like, "Oh, yeah, sure, we'll do it. We'll do it for like one performance only, because who's going to come to this?" Exactly. And I'm like, "We'll do one performance and it won't even sell well and they'll cancel it and I'll move on with my life." But I can at least say I tried. We had to add a second show. Debbie Gravitt's in it. You know how I feel about Debbie Gravitt. I'm just
your favorite voice.
My favorite voice. She can just talk to me all day.
It was on the record in the interview, you guys.
It was on the record. It was on the record.
No, I couldn't believe it. Yeah.
David Lawrence, who wrote High School Musical and is Steven Eady's son, came back to play his dad's role. Looks like his dad. Sounds like his dad. Richard Kind was in it. This adorable kid named Jonah Halpern, who's been in a bunch of Broadway shows. He's really, really incredible. Anyway, so last night,
there's a picture of you, of Richard Kind hanging on you and the other two. That picture is unbelievable. I love it so much.
We sold out. We sold out the first show. Second show's pretty sold, right? But the first show, I'm in the elevator going down, and the maitre d' says to me, there's a lot of VIPs here tonight. And I'm like, oh, okay, sure, probably like a club owner or something.
Right.
Not joking, Kevin. And listeners, not joking. This is Golden Rainbow. This is the Steven Eady show, Golden Rainbow, that nobody had ever done after Steven Eady left the show in 1968. Nobody's ever done this show again.
It was done. It was bye.
Bye-bye, everybody. Because it was written for Steven Eady.
That was it. It was like a Vegas show.
Front row, Jason Robert Brown, Georgia Stitt. Okay. Back row, Mark Shaman, Scott Whitman.
The other golden couple of Broadway.
The other golden couple. VIP table. Ready? VIP table. Mark Sendroff, Marilyn May, Randy Graff, Lucy Arnaz, Walter Marx at 84, who's the composer and lyricist, sharp as a whip.
Of course.
Who was a genius. We should get him on here. Richard J. Alexander. Right? All these people loved. Oh, and tons of others. There's someone I didn't
even, of course,
who loved Golden Rainbow. It was like a rock concert. And I have to give a shout out to somebody really quickly, if I may. If you know Golden Rainbow, and you can look at it on the Tony clip, everybody said that this was the most exciting opening number they had ever seen in their lives. Because it was supposed to be like Las Vegas, and like women came down on carousel horses from the flies. Like, it's very impressive, and you can watch it on YouTube. But one of the things that's really cool is there's this guy, because there's all these drum fills in the middle of the music,
right,
where a guy is just like dancing wildly in a midriff on top of slot machines. Guess who the dancer was in 1968? Larry Merritt, Lawrence Merritt, who we had on the podcast.
Oh, I forgot about that.
So I have a friend who just graduated Penn State. His name is Jonathan Savage. You're going to need to know this name. So I had Jonathan do the dance solos.
I saw the video.
I said, did you see it?
I saw the video.
I said, Jonathan, just stay there. So Jonathan comes out and he's wearing a midriff with no shirt underneath. And he does...
Like the Chiquita lady.
He does the best dancing I ever saw in my life.
And by the bar, right?
And by the bar.
Like, yep, it was amazing.
The show is over, and I got to tell you, Kevin, everybody runs up to me, and they don't want to talk about, I mean, they did talk about Debbie and David, but all the who is this kid? Who is this kid? Who is this kid? Richard J. Alexander grabbed me and goes, that is a young Donna McKechnie. He says, I know a star when I see it, and that man is going to be a star. So
wow.
I'm so, but you know, I just want to give a little shout out to him, and I'll tell you why. When we were doing the open, when we were rehearsing the opening number, I looked at the crowd of the ensemble kids and I said, who here feels really comfortable just dancing? And nobody raised their hand except him. He's like, I'll do it for you, Rob. And look at that. Him doing me a favor just led him to a whole bunch of work, because I think this kid's going to be working like
crazy. Well, everyone else was really dancing their face off, too. It was really
cool. Oh, everyone was dancing. But I mean, he was half naked and dancing on a bar. Yeah. Abs for days. He's so proud of himself. Abs for days. No,
God
but I just,
bless him.
God bless him. I have a six-pack. I'm
proud
so
of you.
Protective of it. I keep it in a huge layer of fat because I don't want it to, you know, be ruined at any point.
Get out of here.
I don't have washboard
also,
abs. I have
you're
a washing
not wearing,
machine.
I can't tell that you're wearing your underwear again if you're
No, wearing, I'm wearing,
remember,
I'm wearing sweats.
Oh, pants.
Sweats.
Nice. Classy.
I'm wearing my sweats.
This week, Rob.
Well, you know,
you.
I'm a classic. How are so anyway, so that was that Golden Rainbow.
Yeah,
lots
lovely.
Of fun. Lots of good times. If you haven't listened to it, it's great. Debbie Gravick came out in an Edie Gourmet wig.
She looked amazing in that wig.
And then it was a really fun. Richard Kind was hysterical. Like, when is he not hysterical? It was so good. We had such a nice time. And so I think I'm not going to say what the show is, but I think I'm going to do another one with Debbie and David at some point.
All right.
I'm kind of excited. I think I've got a couple of ideas are brewing. Anyway, so.
I do.
I've already done I do.
Last 5 years. There it is. Debbie.
She can sing it. She can sing it. She can do whatever the hell she wants. God love her.
Oh, no, that's cool. I hope they do something else that's from that time.
Yeah, I'll tell you when we're off the air because I can't reveal it yet. But I know they're working on the rights right now.
Sorry,
I think it's going to be a lot of fun.
How
are you? How's Legally Blonde? How was your? How was Ren Faire?
Great. All right, Ren Faire was unbelievable. All right, everybody, just to paint the picture for you this weekend, my wife and I
picture it Sicily.
Picture it Pennsylvania. The Pennsylvania Renaissance Fair. We didn't go last year. Last year we went to the New York Renaissance Fair. And that was great. It was much bigger, and we didn't. We prefer the Pennsylvania one, to be honest. It's a 2 hour and 45 minute drive.
Who
it's
are
in
the guys?
Middle of nowhere. It's just north of Lancaster, like an hour north of Lancaster.
Wait, who are the guys you see every year? Marcello?
No. Don Juan and Miguel. All right. So you guys, of course, some of you, first of all, half of you, I probably just lost because you're like, what musical is this? But,
I think I already lost them when I was giving a performance report.
No, I loved your performance report was really good. I enjoyed that. but the Pennsylvania Ren Faire, it's where you, it's like going to a Sleep No More or like an immersive theme park where there's no rides, but there's shows and there's acts and there's musical acts. And it's like a band of like carnival people in many ways, people that travel around to do this. Every state has one and they're all over the place. But you're encouraged to dress up and there's many different themes. This was the Wizarding Weekend. So there's a lot of Harry Potter freaks, and it's basically where all the nerds go to feel like the coolest people ever. And so it was.
That's Broadway awesome. Con for us.
Exactly. There's a lot of crossover I have found in all of these little niche worlds. But it was excellent, Rob. And so Don Juan and Miguel are one of the acts. And I actually watched them when I was a kid growing up. So this is 25 years ago I've been watching them. The same two guys. In fact, his daughter was in the act 20 years ago. And now she's grown up and, you know, out of there. But Don Juan and Miguel are there. And Miguel, I bought the DVD. That's like a documentary about them. It's a little sad. But Miguel was like a legit actor, and he is a legit actor. You can tell he is, and he's so amazing in the show. They're funny. They're so – it's like vaudeville comedy, and then he's got a whip. It's like a whip act. So Don Juan is actually a very highly trained whip person who can whip a can in half and shit like that.
I don't think I've ever asked you what made you want to go to the Renaissance Fair in the beginning of all this? I know you've gone for years and years and years, but when you first went, why?
It was nostalgic first. I mean, like, I went when I was a kid growing up because it's something to do with kids, right? So then I remembered it, but I never dressed up or anything like that. It was just fun to see the shows and the music. And then I think Sutton got fixated on it or thought about it. I'm sure if she were here, she would be able to tell a better how it got started. But
where
it
is she? Just,
she's in the living room.
You made it sound like she's a million miles away. She's in your living room.
No, she's just in the living room. Friends over. She's hanging out. I just think it was a whim. And then I thought we were in visiting my family in Pennsylvania. We just thought, hey, let's go check this out. And I did not dress up. She really wanted to dress up. And then I was sort of not dressed up at all. And this is the first year after 3 years that I dressed up. And let me tell you, it was a completely different game when I dressed up, because then everyone kind of took us both much more seriously. And some people speak in accents and stuff. They're like, oh, huzzah. I could say huzzah all over the place. Oh, good morrow, sir. How fare thee today? And you're like, oh, that's the morning is splendid, methinks, you know, and you just act stupid. But it's so fun. It is. And then you drink beer and stuff throughout the day and wine and stuff. And it's everyone is so friendly and helpful.
Yeah, because they're drunk and they're holding turkey legs.
But you go to what you do, though, is I didn't think about the news once. I didn't think anything. I'm serious here. I mean, it really is a place you go. It's just like Sleep No More. You go to like get lost in this world. And if you kind of like just go with it, you do get lost in the world. And it's more than just a theme park or I don't even know what to call it, like an event space. It's just like a fun adventure. You go on. I'm going to bring you. We want to bring you so bad.
I'll go with you guys. I'm down for that.
Yeah.
And you also went to Miniature World.
And then so I watched this show called CBS Sunday Morning, or as I like to call it, Church. And it's just
– Is that the one that Charlie Rose was on?
Yeah. No. This was Charles Osgood was the host, and now.
Okay.
It's a very just chill. They always talk about the arts, and it's just a feel good show. You always end up crying at some point.
Mo Rocca is a correspondent. You know?
Yeah, Mo Rocca is on there. Yeah. So they did a special about this like miniature village train set thing that this guy had made, and it's mammoth. I mean, it's massively huge, and it started out in he started doing it in the early 1900s, and he finished it. Completed it for the public in the early 50s. My mother actually went there in 1957, and it's still the exact same way that it was in the 60s. And it's just a huge diorama, a town with mountains, and you walk through the sides, and they put on a show where they dim the lights and make it all. It was amazing, and it was authentic. That place was like stepping back in time to the 60s, and not in an ironic way. I mean, like it was been it the building, the people who work there. I mean, it's an experience. It's in Pennsylvania. Very. It's called Roadside.
That's a Jones and Schmidt musical, isn't it?
Actually, fun fact. That's actually got some really good music in it.
Really?
Roadside.
It's
amazing. I love a lot of those scores that were only recorded and then not really done that much. But
I love miniatures. I'm not going to lie.
I can top that
for you. My hometown in Thousand Oaks was right in next to. It was a 2 mile drive away from the Ronald Reagan Presidential Library. You know, I'm a political science guy, so
I know history about.
But I will say this: every year, they would do this. I thought it was really cool. Somebody built a miniature White House. That is literally a room by room recreation in miniature of every room in the White House.
Wow.
With now this is kind of cool. The guy, they have little television sets. You see, like, my hand is, like, maybe, like, an inch big.
Yes, everybody can see that. Yep.
I'm asking you to validate my fingers. Are they not an inch apart?
Yeah. No, they, let me see. Yeah. Yeah.
Right there, right there. With working televisions. Working televisions. And he also has this thing, which is kind of, I think it's kind of cool. They're these little mini telephones that if you call a number, the little phone rings on the little Oval Office desk. It's real. If anyone else has seen this, please let me know. They used to do it at the Reagan Library all the time. It's nice. this gorgeous, stunning miniature version of the White House, which I think is really, really cool. This is why I don't have a lot of friends, I think. I think I just realized that in this moment.
You know, there's probably about as many people who are obsessed with miniature things as there are obsessed with musical theater cast recordings.
If you do both, come sit by me.
You win. So favorite things.
Well, really quickly, I saw you watched the Carol Channing thing, right?
You know, it was a tough watch, I must say. I wasn't, like, thrilled. It was just weird.
Yeah, it's not very good. It's not great.
Really,
it's like, oh, yeah, I wasn't saying, like, my God, it should be picked up. It was a weird one, though.
Oh, but I enjoy her. Like, that is the place to study her real old, you know, before she was a caricature accent.
I'm going to eat a hot dog. Great, Carol. Anything else? Weird.
And all really long shots, all, you know, two cameras.
Well, she's so big, they don't want to, like, get any closer.
Eyes, it was just.
I was hoping that the last thing she would say is, I don't remember eating corn.
There it is.
Once again, if you don't know the corn story, look it up. Look it up.
Yeah, just Google Carol Channing corn.
It's the best thing ever. I don't remember eating corn.
Everyone's favorite way to do her accent, too.
Yeah, there's lots of, you know what? She's the gift that keeps on giving.
Indeed.
Okay, Kevin. So, why don't you go first?
All right, Rob, I shall.
We say the ball is in your court?
Why, thank you, Robert.
What's the musical? What's the musical? No one ever plays with me.
The City of Angels.
Yeah, very good. Thank you.
Oh, whew, gosh, you really, it's like when it's musical theater on Jeopardy, and then I feel so much pressure to get them all right. When you do that to me, I get, like, anxious, and then my mind shuts down, and then I panic, and I'm like, oh, our listeners are listening, and then they think I'm dumb, and then, oh, God, it all just crashes down. Okay.
That was a very vulnerable moment. Thank you for sharing,
just went
Kevin.
There. Sorry, everybody. Wow.
Lizzie. is my blue suit pressed? That was a deep moment there, Kevin.
Is it really?
Yeah, that's it. If I fucking see you singing that in a rainstorm, I'm walking the other way.
Once again, I feel like Rachel Maddow, she opens her show and she's always like, this time, you know, I thought we were going to have a regular thing and it's really special tonight. I feel like I'm always saying, I feel like I had to look up this up because I feel like we've done it before. It's once again something that it should have been done before.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater. SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUFSmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on S.E. Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that, with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at OutsidersMusical.com.
Where I'm going to a niche group of people. These are people who really listen to the music of a show, who really understand what arranging and orchestrations, and other people who don't. But this is really a book that speaks to them. And it really is for the listener who appreciates or wants to learn about all the layers and things that actually you never, ever think about when you go and sit into a Broadway theater or listen to a cast recording and hear that music. Because I'm talking, of course, of the art of orchestration. We've often talked about how that Tony Award category is very, very difficult to define, at least to quantify how one's quality is reflected and how do you rate that, you know? And this book by Stephen Susskind called The Sound of Broadway Music really does that. It is for the person who's very knowledgeable of music and the person who is not knowledgeable of music. And you can get a lot out of it. It's definitely a reference book, but you can read it cover to cover and be just fine and have a great time. Have you read it, Rob?
You know what? It has always been on my list and I have never read it. I'm ashamed to admit it.
That's cool. No, I just was curious. It's amazing. And we love Stephen Susskind. We love his books and we love, you know, what he has given us in the past.
He agreed to be a guest on this. We need to sit down and talk to him. Yeah.
That's wonderful news. He wrote a show, you know, he wrote the Show Tunes book. He's done opening night,
He's also done the White House Miniature book.
Second Act Trouble. I love that book. That's one of it. Yes. And the White House. So many, the White House Miniature book. Good. You're joking there. Yeah, I got it.
Is it really?
Is it really me? So The Sound of Broadway Music, I'm just looking at the title page. Forgive me, guys. That's why I was riffing.
Kevin's reading the book for the first time on air.
No.
He got desperate, folks.
Much like talking about the art of orchestration, I'm trying to figure out how to tell this little spot and make it interesting.
I thought you were going to say The Artist's Way.
Yeah. Starting tomorrow, chapter one. He groups the book in many different ways, and you can read it by the sections. He basically explains the system of how orchestrators became what they are and arrangers and how they got paid the way they get paid. Because basically the secret that people don't know is that orchestrators are some of the highest paid people of any Broadway production. In the golden age of Broadway especially, they were making hand over fist in money. They worked their butts off. They got paid because they got paid per page for a Broadway show, and they all worked for one guy in a conglomerate, and so they basically had all of the work in the market, and they just got paid huge sums of money. And every Broadway musical knew that a major part of the budget was going to go towards orchestration, especially for new musicals, because you throw things out on the road and you have to write. And back then they hand wrote all of the parts, of course, for the full orchestra. You know, go ahead. Yeah,
I was going to say, maybe you're going to answer this. Who's your favorite orchestrator?
You know, that's a really good question. I have many, and this book covers, just to be fair, the golden age, like up until about they go to about 1980 because they lived for a long time, but they really focus on, you know, the more acoustic sound of orchestration versus how you can orchestrate now for the microphones. I just want to clarify there. One of my favorites is Ginsler, Red Ginsler. He did Gypsy and the big brassy sounds, like the really big, not Gypsy, like Bye Bye Birdie, like he would
oh,
have
yeah yeah yeah
like the jazz flutes in there, you know, like you know, there were like four flutes. No one ever put four flutes in the pit, you know, and brought more a jazzier sound. I also love, well, Hershey K was he did West Side Story. He also was a more orchestra minded person, like Robert Russell Bennett, who was the grandfather of them all. Yeah. He did Oklahoma Carousel. And I like the more orchestral sound, like classical music, not just like follow the melody and then throw in a random, you know, fill. But I like a bigger sound, much like when you saw South Pacific at Lincoln Center, and that was, you know, that's the year that Robert Russell Bennett posthumously finally won the orchestration Tony Award.
Thank God.
There was never an award back then because people couldn't, you know, quantify it. How do you say it's good? You know, today, how do you say something's, oh, that was a good orchestration?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, it's tough because it is. Do you just like the song, or is it because it's creative? Like, you know, Dear Evan Hansen, I think that is a fantastic orchestration with just a couple people.
Is that,
you know,
Alex Lack?
Yeah, Alex Moore is just a magician when it comes to small ensembles and creating a big sound. But getting back to the book, this is about having bigger ensembles creating a big sound. And so what I also appreciate about this book, so he groups it into the 12 major orchestrators, and he gives you a biography of all of them, and he gets, you know, almost gossipy in a ways, because some of them were alcoholics and some of them were in the closet, and, you know, it's not a dusty read at all. It is a very fascinating read.
Do you have the book in front of you?
I'm looking at the title page right now.
Can I ask you a question? You don't have to go into detail. Who are the 12 big ones that he lists?
Here we go. Yeah, I'll say them really fast because everyone knows probably their names or at least has read them before. Robert Russell Bennett, Ralph Burns.
Oh, I love. He's my Ralph Burns is my favorite.
I love
favorite.
Ralph Burns too. He was one of the big first jazzy players. Alcoholic. He struggled a lot with his, but it never affected his work. He could just he worked his ass off.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Chicago, Nanette are my favorites.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yep. Red Gensler, as I said, Hershey Kay, Irv Kostel, Philip Lang, Sid Raymond, Ted Royal, Eddie Sauter, man, he was good. Hans Spielek, Walker, Larry Wilcox.
Can you?
Sorry. Yeah.
I was going to say, so, I'm going to see you tomorrow. Would you mind bringing me the book to read?
Yeah, Rob. Yeah. I mean, I'm definitely. Yeah. Yours. Wow.
That's amazing.
And then they go through after that. So no, but that's not all. They go through they call it valued members of the music department. And guess who he mentions and gives a little biography sketch on?
Who?
Trudy Rittman.
Oh, your girlfriend.
She was one of my favorite things, everybody. She was a dance music arranger. And I thought she worked for Richard Rodgers. And I really believe that she never got her due. I think she was an incredible artist that, perhaps because of her gender, she was not, you know.
Yeah.
And then he also talks about the art of orchestration. He talks about, you know, how songs are made. He lists off songs in the orchestrator, and then he tells you to play like on a, you know, on the street where you live from the original cast recording of My Fair Lady, and he'll say, listen for this jazz thing, listen for this clarinet piece. So for the person who knows absolutely nothing about orchestration, it's a great way to learn a little bit and to know what to listen for. And what I've always thought, you know, why don't someone just tell me what I'm supposed to hear and then I'll understand. And this is the kind of thing that really, even for, I mean, I'm a music director and a musician, and yeah, whenever I read it, I get more out of it. Perhaps one of the most interesting parts of it is the research he did. In the back, it is a alphabetical of over 700 shows. And for almost every single one, or for most of them, he gives the orchestrator for all of them. And not only that, because not one person wrote shows. That's another secret people don't know, is that it was always three or four people that worked on a Broadway show because they were so big. There's so much work. But he literally lists every song from the show and who orchestrated which song.
Oh, my God. That's incredible. Yeah. What a great research. Okay, I'm going to grab it from you tomorrow if I can and pick it up and read it. It's so funny that you mentioned orchestrators, because my favorite thing today has brilliant orchestrations on it.
Okay, bring it.
If that's okay, that's our thematic way I think of.
Well, I think I've talked about orchestration quite enough.
No, I mean, okay. Now, I have to go back. We were talking about these '90s albums, these '90s concert albums that we were talking. You know what we were talking about the last couple of weeks about how, you know, we love the back of the Show Music magazine and they got the weird folk and photos on there.
Yeah, I forgot to take a picture and post it.
Well, there is one I listened to, and it is so good. I have not stopped listening to it since I found it on Apple Music. I am over the moon. I am just over the moon because I think the orchestrations and arrangements on this album are
Jessica
so
Voss, we already
no. These are so damn good. Orchestrations by a former guest of ours, Larry Moore, and arrangements by Mark Hummel. This is a CD that came out in 1994. And
right in the heart of it, right in the peak.
Right in the peak of all of this.
Of the cabaret.
And the photo, it's a female solo album.
All right.
The grand image on all of this is a woman against a bass, you know, an upright bass, just looking longingly. It is the wonderful Sally Mays.
Sally Mays, I was going to say.
And this album, ladies and gentlemen, oh my God, it is called Our Private World. Our Private World. And it's Sally Mays singing the songs of Comden and Green. Oh my God. The first number is a combo. First of all, her mashups are amazing. Her mashups are, first of all, and we all know Sally Mays is, hopefully. You know, she was in the She Loves Me revival, and she's done all this other stuff. She's great. And she does it right now.
I associate her with cabaret lately.
She's like a big cabaret performer. You know, she's a big cabaret performer. Her opening number is Together from On the 20th Century, mashed up with Fireworks from Do Re Mi. Her Little Bit in Love, the arrangements are so fabulous. She sings Being Good from Hallelujah Baby. You literally have to scrape me off the ceiling. You have to scrape me off this feeling. She does a really fun thing called the Savage Man Medley, where she sings Call Me Savage. And then she does Primitive Man from the On the Town movie, which in the On the Town movie is absolutely atrocious, but she makes it really fantastic. She does, Talking to Yourself, Lonely Town, Some Other Time, Our Private World. It's wonderful. Now, we mentioned this last time. There's always one song that they have to just, you know, change it around a little bit to put their unique spin on it. Yep. I'm going to say this. Sally Mae's, this song is not, this CD is 98% perfection. The 2% you can skip it is I Can Cook Too.
Do they put bongos? Are there bongos?
It's a languid tempo. So it's like, I can.
The old, let's slow down the up tempo. Yeah, that's a great idea. Slow it down. Yeah, even more.
And I'm like, you know what? But I'm going to forgive her because this opening number, and I got to tell you, Larry's orchestrations on it are so good. They are so damn good. You're going to listen to the opening, and you're not going to want to stop. So, ladies and gentlemen, my thing this week is Sally Mays's Our Private World from 1994. From 1994. Sally Mays from 1994. If you only got time to listen to a couple of things, the first things are Together and Fireworks and then Being Good from Hallelujah Baby, which, like I said, you legitimately need to scrape me off of the ceiling because it's so damn good. It's a marvelous album. And I think, I remember who the producer was on it. It was that, how do you say it? Veray Saraband?
Is it Bruce Kimmel?
Yeah. Bruce Kimmel was Bruce's thing.
There it is.
Yeah. We got to get him.
That's really great, Rob. That's a good one.
Yeah, it is on Apple Music and it's on Spotify. That's how found it. And like I said, you know, if you get the chance to see Sally Mays in concert. Wait a minute, Kevin. Hold on one second.
Was I wrong?
No.
I'm here.
Hold on. I want to just play the opening of Together.
Is everybody still here? This is a first, everybody.
I'm putting the phone up to the mic so you can hear this.
I cannot believe it.
Tell me how good this is.
Oh, God. Oh, it's actually not that bad. You guys can hear that? Feel my heart hammer, feel my pulse quicken. You
are together. How great is that opening orchestration?
It also feels like I just turned on I went the other direction with the channels and I went to like the old stations, you know?
Is that though?
TV all of a sudden. It's great. It sounds, it's very awesome.
Doesn't that sound good?
Yeah.
Anyway,
I want to hear it.
So anyway, go take a listen to Sally Mae's Our Private Worlds.
I love that you just did that.
She sings Come. Because I did not realize what I was going to get when I first listened to it. And I'm like, wait a minute. I'm like, this is really fun orchestrations.
Yeah.
I'm like, and I looked it up. It was Larry Moore. I wish I had known. I wish I would have listened to this when we had interviewed him. I would have asked him 90 questions. So anyway, that's mine for this week. Our Private World, Sally Mays, Compton and Green.
And mine is the Stephen Susskind book, The Sound of Broadway Music, book of orchestrators and orchestrations.
Amazing. So we will see you all. We'll hear you all. We'll feel you all. Hear me, touch me, feel me.
Is it really me?
Oh, Jesus, he's singing again.
Is it really true?
Why don't you play that role? What's it, Lizzie?
Suddenly I'm beautiful.
Why don't you play Lizzie and I'll play Starbuck?
Oh, we should do that in a scene study class, Rob.
In our scene study class, because Kevin and I are trying to sharpen our skills.
I do love that song he sings. I like other people singing it. He tells the story.
I don't know. You know,
110 in the Shade is one of my all-time favorite scores. The opening, oh, gosh. Going to be another long. Oh, God, it's so good.
I don't know it all that well.
Rob.
Although when she bursts into Please God Don't Let Me Die Alone. Is that what she says? Is that
the lyric?
I'm always like, oh my God, like we got real serious real fast.
No, I know.
What happened to Little Red Hat?
It's still based on the Rainmaker, but
is Little Red Hat from 110 in the Shade? Or is that Floor of the Red Menace?
Little Red Hat.
Is that 110 in the Shade or Floor of the Red Menace?
It's 110 in the Shade.
Thank God.
But the juvenile roles.
Well, you tell me I can't play those anymore.
I don't think those days. You could do it at the Muni, probably.
At the Muni, when I'm 20 million feet away from everybody.
You could totally play the Bobby Steggert part at the Muni.
Now that he's retired, those roles are open, so I can go in.
He's going to be, what, a social worker or something?
Yeah, that's awesome, changing a career path.
I think if you find something else to do, that's...
that he finds as fulfilling as this, that's great.
Amen.
Amen. Go ahead and pass the ammunition. Was it praise the Lord and pass the ammunition? Frank Lesser World War II songs.
Oh, gosh. Hey,
hey, that's what I'm going to sing at my cabaret. Rob Schneider you're sings do a World War II songs. Oh,
cabaret below, and just Rob Schneider sings the wars.
Somebody just suggested to me that we should do Over Here, the Andrew Sisters one.
That's interesting.
Is it Over Here or Over There? Over Here, Over There.
Over Here. I think it's – I don't know, actually.
Over Somewhere.
So, Over Here, I think.
Anyway, we're not doing it. Unless it's because now we're doing my one man World War II show, you know. What are some of the other world?
I assumed we're cutting. We cut this, but can you tell me what the show is going to be?
Oh yeah, I'll get. No, you know what? We're still on the air.
Oh great!
Because we haven't signed off yet.
God, I hope everyone.
No, I'll give you. I'll give you a clue. It's such an obvious clue.
Told us. I just can't remember.
No, it's the other show. It's a show that his dad did. It's another Steve Lawrence show.
Oh, nice.
Which is pretty easy because the guy only did two. We've already done Golden Rainbow.
Exactly.
Golden Rainbow, shine above me.
I bet that was stuck in your head for a while.
You know what was stuck in my head? For once in your life, it will be a night incredible. It will be a meal inedible. Take a chance for once in your life. Thank you.
I love you for that.
If you can see footage of it online, watch it because those kids are dancing.
That
were the
opening
number.
That kid was like working his butt off.
We have 20. Yeah. We had 25 kids on that stage. Walter looked at me and goes, "You have more kids on this stage than we had in the original Broadway show." It's like wall of sound, no, Walter. Wall of sound.
Man, I want to get him. Talk about that's.
He's had a really interesting life.
Special guy. Yeah.
Really interesting life. Okay. Well,
all right.
That's it because I got to go back and listen to Sally Mays.
Killed enough time for you guys, so talk to you next week.
Don't be so enthusiastic about it, Kevin.
I feel like if
anyone knows anything about ribbon dancing for my World War One medley where I sing I'll Be Seeing You, I want to do an interpretive dance with ribbons.
I literally have a
out.
Picture of you like in like tight spandex with one of those sticks with the ribbon on the end of it, and like I'm
but
literally
it's red, white, and blue.
Yeah, but top like shirtless and running around a stage and doing those dive rolls. Like I picture you doing right now, like doing it, like swirling it down and doing a tuck roll, and then on your knees going up and doing another one. Oh gosh, Rob,
I'll be seeing you in all the familiar places,
and I'm in the back singing like old. From 110 in the
shade. Guys, buy tickets because no one else will. All right, till next time.
All right. Bye, everybody.
Raindrops on roses and whiskers on kittens, bright copper kettles and warm woolen mittens, brown paper packages tied up with strings. These are a few of my favorite things.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard. So you were being crucified over here, but not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.